expecting nothing beyond the ordinary this sad Christmas, find themselves swept up into something extraordinary. Or so we assume. Everyone assumes in this story, for good or ill. And since this is a Christmas story, let us assume it's for good. Sincerely, Carla Kelly. Chapter 1.
Buck up, Captain Everard, he told his reflection in the mirror. You promised you would do this, so to Kent you will go.
Joseph Everard, post-captain, Royal Navy, turned around to stare hard at Lieutenant David Newsom's paltry heap of personal effects on his desk, wishing he could make it go away. It remained there unmovable. Another sad testament to the fleet action, now called Trafalgar. That one word was enough to convey all the horror, the pounding, and the fire, which combined to create the most bittersweet of victories, with the well-nigh inconceivable loss of Vice-Admiral Sir Horatio Nelson. Had anyone been interested, Joe could have explained his reluctance to deliver David's effects in person. It wasn't because his second laugh had done anything amiss, or behaved in any way unbecoming an officer and a gentleman. True, he was young, but weren't we all at some point? Joe had done this sad duty many times before, whenever possible. He should have been inured to the tears, the sadness and the resentment, even when a mother, father, or wife had stared daggers at him, as if he was the author of their misery, and not Napoleon. Left to his own devices, Joe Everard would happily have served king and country, patrolling the seven seas and engaging in no fleet actions whatsoever. He had never required a major, lengthy war to prove his manhood. They were all puppets in the hands of Napoleon. Now that war had resumed after the brief Peace of Amiens, Joe saw no shortcut to victory for years. Something worse explained his reluctance for this distasteful duty. Something Lord St. Vincent, or as he had been then, Captain John Jervis, had described one night. They had come off victorious in some fleet action or other. They tended to blur together. And Captain Jervis and his men were moping about in the wardroom. The wounded were tended and quiet, and the pumps in the bowels of the ship had finished their noisy job.
Look at us,
Captain Jervis had remarked to his first lieutenant, an unfortunate fellow who died the following year at Camperdown.
There is nothing quite as daunting as the lethargy that victory brings.
No doubt. Trafalgar, a victory as huge as anyone in the Royal Navy could ask for, dumped a full load of melancholy on Joe Everard's usually capable shoulders. Why one man should die and another should not was a mystery for the ages, and not a trifling question for a mere post-captain who had done his duty, as had every man aboard the HMS Ulysses, a 48-gun frigate. He and his crew of well-trained stalwarts had babied the Ulysses through the storm the next day, limped into Torbay, and remained there waiting a final diagnosis from the overworked shipwrights. He and his officers had travelled from Torbay to Plymouth to sit in the Drake and drink. They talked, played whist, and cursed the French until they were silent, spent and remarkably hungover. Joe couldn't release anyone to return home to wives, but the wives could come to Plymouth.
More power to you,
he thought, as he had listened to bedsprings creaking rhythmically, and wished he had found the leisure, or perhaps the courage, to marry. After a week, the verdict was a month to refurbish and repair in the Torquay docks. He released his officers to their homes for 3 weeks, and cautiously gave his crew the glad tidings, wary that some might not return, and truth to tell, hardly blaming them if they did not. His sailing master, a widower with children in Canada, had no objection to staying in Torquay for the repairs. Such a kindness gave Captain Joseph Everard no excuse to avoid the condolence visit to Weltby, Kent, where Second Lieutenant Newsom's parents and one spinster sister resided. Since England apparently still expected every man to do his duty, Joe sent a note to Augustus Newsom, explaining the reason for his visit and hoping he would not upset the family by returning their son's belongings in person. He added a postscript, stating when he could be expected in Weltby. He chose to take the mail coach from Plymouth to Weltby, mainly because he enjoyed the sight of ordinary folk going about their business, almost as if the war raging